Well, that really sort of surprises me, because it does seem like the published accounts are coming in sharing this experience with us. This has been Tribute. My guest today is Mary Ann Boundy, a mother and Fresh Air Fund volunteer. I'm Jenny Godwin. Thank you. Good day.
This is Long Island's non-commercial alternative at 90.1 FM in stereo, WUSB, Stony Brook.
Good afternoon and welcome to Chatterbox, a telephone call-in program where you, our listeners, are invited to call us up with your comments, opinions, questions, and that kind of thing. Our guest for today is Steve Englebright, candidate for the Suffolk County Legislature's 5th District, opposing incumbent Ferdinand Geese. Before we get into things today, I'd like to throw some words at you that we've been hearing a lot of in the last couple of weeks concerning the downing of the Korean Airlines jet. Have you been hearing these words a lot? Heinous, despicable, cowardly, barbaric, inexcusable, unforgivable, outrageous, unprovoked, outlandish, reprehensible. Yes, those are all words that the media has been ringing you, and we're going to see what words the Soviet media has been bringing to us. We'll be listening to Radio Moscow coming up after this program at 3:30, so be sure to tune into that. And it's a lot of interesting things. We taped it last night right off Radio Moscow. Someone stuck something interesting in my mailbox. I don't know who puts things in my mailbox, but occasionally I find something rather interesting. And this is a report from the National Association of Broadcasters. It says most listeners consider radio very important. A new survey shows that radio plays a major role in the lives of most listeners, and almost three-quarters of the 1,300 respondents agree that something very important would be missing from life if they did not have radio. Now, there are certain types of radio stations, as I'm sure you know. USB is a type in itself. Then there's beautiful music radio, and fans of that kind of broadcasting do not just want background music, apparently. In fact, they are emotionally involved with their favorite stations, and they're extremely loyal to them. Doesn't say whether or not they'd go to war for their station, but it seems like they're very, very patriotic to them. While many believe album-oriented rock fans are non-conformists, they actually follow the lead of their friends more than any other group when choosing a radio station, and they are most likely to listen with their friends. AOR fans think of themselves as music experts who know more about music than most people. They like traditional hard rock far more than new wave music. Like AOR fans, contemporary hit radio fans want an unpredictable, trendy-sounding station, but have less ego involvement. Their listening is more personal and more one-on-one. While adult contemporary fans want a station that does not demand too much of their attention, a cheerful companion that avoids obtrusiveness of any kind. Then there are country fans. They're unique because they want a more traditional folksy station. Also, it would take a lot to switch them from their favorite. Nostalgia fans think a lot like AOR fans. They are the older generation music experts, quite unlike their peers who prefer beautiful music. Then there are news talk fans, and to them, radio is the authority. They want someone serious they can look up to, and are the medium's unique listeners. They do not listen to be cheered up, to unwind, or to take their minds off problems. They listen to engage their minds. Full-service fans seek the same intellectual stimulation that news talk fans do: practical information, community involvement, self-esteem, and things to think about. They just do not feel quite as strongly about these things as do the news talk fans. Now, of course, there's no one kind of listener for any format. In fact, there are 4 groups of country fans, 3 groups of news talk fans, 6 groups of AOR fans, and 2,000 groups of USB fans. Each group or segment is reached with different programming and promotional campaigns. Well, I want to thank whoever put that in my mailbox. It certainly is interesting to see what kind of people are listening to radio. And we'd really like to see what kind of people are out there today listening to our radio station. Our telephone number is 246-7901. If you're outside of the area code, or even if you're inside the area code and you want to sound like you're outside, you can put a 516 in front of that. We got a call earlier today from New York City, I understand, so there's something weird happening to the radio waves today. Well, as I mentioned, our guest today is Steve Englebright, candidate for the Suffolk County Legislature 5th District, opposing incumbent Ferdinand Geese. Steve, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Eric.
You are, in fact, running for the legislature. Have you ever served as any kind of a political person before? Is this your first venture into that world?
This is my first venture into elected politics, but I have been serving the public through government as an advisor to government for many years now. I'm presently the principal geological advisor to the New York State Legislative Commission on Water Resource Needs for Long Island. I've served as the principal advisor to the New York State Natural Heritage Trust. I've served the New York State Council on the Arts as a advisor to the Museum Aid Program, and I worked with local town and county government for a number of years now. So I have had experience in government, and this is just an opportunity, I think, to increase the level of my service to the general public.
How long would you say you've been thinking about running for legislature?
Well, I've been really thinking about it for about a year now, but the actual invitation from the Democratic Party to actually come down and have an interview was something that was somewhat of a surprise. I mean, the thought had crossed my mind, but I was not actively pursuing it. And then I found that I was being actively pursued.
Why do you think that was? Because of the things you've been involved in?
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is the county legislature? What do they do?
Well, the Suffolk County Legislature is a very important unit of government that has the ability to oversee the entire geographical region of the eastern half of Long Island. It is that unit of government that provides police. It is the county unit of government that has the health department, the planning department, the social services department. It's the unit of government that manages our county park system, which is approximately 19,000 acres in size in total. It's a unit of government which acts as a flow-through for community development funds from federal government. It's a unit of government which is very important for flow-through funds from the state. Of course, many of these functions are much too complex to be managed in each of the 10 towns or replicated in each of the 10 towns. For example, it would be chaotic to try to have the county health department in 10 separate towns, which is how many towns we have in Suffolk County. So it really does make sense to have a county unit of government. It is cost effective, and it makes for good government. Theoretically, at least. There hasn't been a lot of good government in recent years.
What has been wrong?
Well, the main problem in county government has been the lack of balance. There has been a Republican-dominated county legislature for the past several years, and that group has been quite arrogant and unresponsive to the public's needs.
Can you cite examples of that?
Well, sure. The county legislature earlier this year restructured, and I say the county legislature, I'm talking about the Republican majority, restructured the rules of the legislature so as to limit the amount of time that the public could participate in dialogue with the legislature, with the legislative body. It actually limited the amount of time that the public had to about 3 minutes per person. The county legislature's Republican majority also passed a local law which would have taken special elections. In other words, when there's a vacancy, Bob Mrazek, for example, left the county legislature to go to work for us in the U.S. Congress, and that left a vacancy. The Republican majority was very interested in trying to change the rules by which vacancies were filled. Mm-hmm. They wanted to have the vacancies filled by appointment rather than by a vote of the people.
And who would appoint? The entire legislature?
No, they would, because they are the majority. And that's one of the big problems in the county right now.
What finally happened with that?
Well, there were two special elections, both in heavily Republican registered areas, and the Democrats won both of the special elections and thwarted the attempt of the Suffolk County Legislature's majority from actually being able to follow through with their initiative. They need one more vote, if you count the noses that are needed in order to actually drive that particular law all the way through. And they needed to win in those special elections, and they did not. And it's quite clear that the people in each of those districts, one was in Babylon and one was in Huntington, the people rejected the possibility of losing the ability to choose who would represent them, and instead elected the Democrats so as to be able to still have some input into who would represent them. That's just one example. There are many, many examples of arrogance and foolishness at the county level, and it's unfortunate because it's given county government as a unit of government a pretty bad name, which is regrettable because that unit of government is very important and really does have an active role to play in our life and in our society here.
You are listening to Chatterbox. My guest is Steve Englebright, candidate for the Suffolk County Legislature 5th District, opposing Ferdinand Geese, and your calls are welcome.
This is WUSB Stony Brook. Give us a call, 246-7901.
And we do have a call on the line, so let's go right to it. Hello, USB, you're on the air.
I'm on the air?
Yeah.
Okay, a question for Mr. Englebright. I'd like to find out how he stands compared to his opponent on the Shoreham nuclear issue.
Well, my opponent has been all over the lot on that issue in the past. At the present time, he seems to have found religion and is a vigorous opponent. But that's only within recent months. And he's been in office 6 years, and the problems of the fiasco at Shoreham didn't just happen overnight, and he's part of the reason that the problems, in fact, have become what they are. I'll say what my position is. I believe that the Long Island Lighting Company should be reorganized as a publicly owned utility, that we should not allow the Shoreham nuclear plant to open for primarily fiscal reasons. I don't think that there is any need for the Long Island community to have to become the number one rate-paying community in the entire nation. And I think that the economics of the plant really speak to a need to take a very careful look at the concept of public power. As you may know, there are three public power municipalities on Long Island right now at Freeport, Rockville Center, and Greenport. They receive power through the Lilco grid from the Power Authority of New York State, or PASNY as it's called. 3 weeks ago, the Grumman Corporation received PASNY power. They lowered their rates about 50%. I don't see that there is any reason why the public at large shouldn't have the same benefits. Clearly, the obstacle is not a mechanical one. If Grumman can get upstate power, the people can get upstate power. And the main barrier seems to be a political one.
Do you have any other questions, sir?
Yes, I do. As far, I know that you had said earlier in the program that being involved with the Suffolk County Legislature, I know you're involved with checks and balances and the budget. Looking at the problem of Shoreham, would it therefore really be a problem concerning, are you looking at it in terms of more of a financial, or is it there a safety hazard, or both? As far as the, you know, because we've heard a lot about the safety problems that are going on with Shoreham right now, and evidently it's, at least from what I gather, it's like a multi-million dollar fiasco, which probably should have never even started to begin with. I don't know how you feel about that, but I'd like to get more of a reaction from you. Just what can you do if you're elected to try to remedy the situation with Shoreham as it is now? I mean, it's already there. I mean, all this money has already gone into it.
Right. Well, the Shoreham plant should never have been built. Indeed, when Loco had their master plan for development of new plants many years ago, you may recall that they were planning not only Shoreham, but Jamesport 1 and Jamesport 2 and a whole galaxy of nuclear plants. The question in hindsight is why did this all start to take form in the way it did? Because when you start to look at some of the evaluations of electrical power needs, Attorney General Robert Abrams, for example, has projected that Loco has about a 42% excess generating capacity without Shoreham at the present time. And it doesn't appear to me that there is a great need for Shoreham, nor was there ever a truly justifiable need. What we really have in the case of the Shoreham nuclear plant is an investment that is being, at this point, it's about 10 times cost overrun, which is just phenomenal. And that investment is being called mismanagement. It may, in fact, be very good management. Now, that's a provocative idea, but let me just lay out this scenario to you. If you were an investor in the monopoly known as the Long Island Lighting Company, and you were guaranteed a rate of return on your investment, and your investment was projected to originally be some $250 million, and all of a sudden your management was allowing the cost of the project to go 10 times higher, but you were guaranteed the same percent rate of return, the real dollars that would come back to you as an investor into that utility would be substantially more than you originally had expected. From your perspective as an investor, that would be very good management. And indeed, one has to wonder whether there is not a certain amount of this type of activity that has taken place in the past. This is one of the reasons why I'd like to see the Long Island Lighting Company completely reorganized. I'd like to see the type of power that we receive here not have the middleman, the shareholders, into the middle of the rate-paying equation. We paid about $350 million out of our hides last year to the Long Island Lighting Company shareholders. And I would submit to you that that is the main reason that our electrical rates are so high and that there is a reasonable likelihood that not all of what's been going on at Shoreham. Again, I would point to the fact that they had originally wanted to build three plants. Clearly, Loco.
Three plants.
I thought three plants.
There was Jamesport and there was Shoreham. What was the third?
Jamesport 2.
There were two in Jamesport.
There were two in Jamesport, and they were looking for another site about 10 years ago on the East End. And it's clear that if you look at this whole thing in historical perspective, that the Long Island Lighting Company wanted to go into the power export business in a big way. They wanted us to pay for the infrastructure. They wanted their shareholders to reap the profits.
And power export. Now, that's you're saying we wouldn't need the power here. We'd be shipping
right.
It someplace else.
Right. They wanted to ship it onto the grid, sell it to New Jersey, to Connecticut, and onto the state grid upstate.
Well, thanks for calling, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Our number is 246-7901. Shoreham is definitely an interesting topic and one that's come up quite a bit. In fact, there is a fact-finding committee, I believe, that's soon to present a report. That committee consists of our own President John Marburger. Do you know anything about what that committee will say or is likely to come up with?
I have no inside information on it. My prediction is that the committee will come up with a series of options and leave the actual choice of which option to go with to elected officials.
The county legislature?
Probably the governor, who was the person who appointed the commission.
I see. Now, if the county legislature said that they have said, in effect, that Shoreham should be scrapped, have they not?
That's correct.
By a vote of
unanimous.
Wasn't there one person?
I take it back, yes. Lou Howard.
Yeah, Lou Howard.
That's right, Mr. Howard.
Now, if the county legislature makes up their mind that the plant is totally worthless, it's a waste of money, and what's more, could even be a hazard to the health of the people, the governor has the power to just turn around and negate that?
Well, this is an interesting question. It's not clear that the governor can do that by fiat. It may be that he would have to submit a bill to the legislature and receive the approval of the legislature for some sort of radical departure from the norm. The governor certainly has the ability, if there is a health emergency, to do something like that. But if there is a plant that is not online yet, it would be difficult to show that that is a health emergency.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would probably require legislative action at the state level, some sort of state enabling legislation for a reorganization of the way in which LOCO would be working.
Now, you mentioned before that your opponent, Ferdinand Geese, saw religion and is now opposed to the mm-hmm. Shoreham plant. Now, by that, do you mean that he more or less hopped on the bandwagon?
That's exactly right.
Now, what is this bandwagon? Why is suddenly everybody against Shoreham? Is it for health reasons or financial reasons or just because it seems the thing to do?
Well, it just seems the thing to do in the case of my opponent. 2 years ago, and not only my opponent, but also the county executive who has been doing all the right things from the point of view of preventing the plant from opening in this year. But if you look back just a couple of years, take a look at the way in which my opponent, Mr. Geese, was voting, he was definitely on the wrong side of this issue. And so was Mr. Cohallen. And Mr. Geese voted in, I believe it was August of 1981, to accept $250,000 from the Long Island Lighting Company to do a study of the evacuation plan, to actually design the evacuation plan for the plant. Of course, now he says that an evacuation is impossible. But 2 years ago, he was willing to take money from the Long Island Lighting Company, which would have gone to the Regional Planning Board, or actually to the Suffolk County Planning Agency, and have the county actually become a part of the evacuation plan for the plant. This would, of course, have soiled the county's ability to be an objective reviewer of any evacuation plan. Of course, in recent months, the county legislature, Mr. Geese included, has very strongly said, oh, well, an evacuation is impossible. And just 2 years ago, he was willing to take the silver coin from the Long Island Lighting Company itself, and it shows that his relationship to this issue has been one of an opportunist and a political opportunist at that. And again, I repeat, the problem that we now face of a financial, overbearing financial weight of electrical utility charges that approach even being what our mortgage payments are, did not happen overnight. And I would hope that the electorate would take a close look at the voting record of the people who are in office and have been in office, including Ferdinand Geese, during the years that this fiasco evolved to the point that it's at now.
How can we look at people's voting records?
Well, in the weeks ahead, there will be an increasing dialogue about voting records in the newspapers. You will have an opportunity to see, I will, for example, be mailing individuals within the 5th Legislative District part of, I can't send the whole voting record because it's quite long, but I will send relevant and significant parts of the voting record out. Let
now,
people look at it.
If somebody did want to look at the entire thing, though, are they at libraries?
Well, you'd have to go to the clerk of the county legislature.
I see.
So it's a very lengthy thing. Many, many of the votes are trivial and minor. Everything from recognizing a local school visitation to the legislature to bills of great significance and social consequence. But they're all mixed in together in a very long narrative type of record.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to select out from that record the parts of it that really give a profile of where an individual has been on an issue and whether that individual has been consistent or not. In the case of my opponent, as I said before, he's been all over the lot. He has been a political opportunist, and that has really, in large part, led to the chaotic development of this issue within the county.
Now, how can you prove that you yourself are sincere about this, that you aren't also jumping on the bandwagon with the Shoreham issue?
Well,
because you don't have a voting record since you...
I don't have a voting record, but I've been a public issue advocate for many years. And indeed, almost 4 years ago, I appeared on a stage with legislator Wayne Prospect, who has a very consistent voting record on this. And
which way?
He's been leading the effort to close Shoreham.
Mm-hmm.
And I appeared on the stage of the Shoreham Wading River High School and spoke about, from my own expertise as a geologist, about the possible negative consequences of an accident at the plant, and went on record at that time that I was concerned that the negative consequences to water quality, should there be a particulate release to the atmosphere from a partial meltdown of the plant, would be very serious. So my record is, you know, long-standing, goes back a number of years. It is not a legislative record. This is my first run for public office, but it is nevertheless a record of involvement.
I see. Now, we are talking to Steve Engelbreit, the candidate for the Suffolk County Legislature 5th District. The 5th District is Stony Brook and...
Stony Brook, Setauket, Port Jefferson Station, part of Coram, part of Center Reach, the northern portions of each of those communities.
Uh-huh.
And goes to the west all the way to the Smithtown line, south to the northern boundary of Lake Grove, and takes in on the eastern side all of Port Jefferson Station and Port Jefferson.
If you have a question for Mr. Engelbreit or a comment, give us a call. Our phone lines are open, area code 516-246-7901. And Steve, you've earned a reputation as a bit of an environmentalist with your work with the museum here at Stony Brook, and especially your work with these things called pine barrens.
Yes.
You want to tell us about those?
Well, sure. I've really been pioneering the effort to protect our pine barrens watersheds on Long Island. I was one of the first people to recognize that there was a very, very important aspect of the woodlands, the native woodlands known as the pine barrens, to the long-term health and well-being of our society here, which is that these are the only places on Long Island where we know with a great deal of predictability that the water beneath these areas is absolutely pristine. And I have been leading the effort to protect our drinking water. As I mentioned at the outset, I'm the principal advisor now to the State Commission on Water Resource Needs for Long Island. And one of the things that the Legislative Commission has been promoting is the concept of protecting drinking water by protecting the recharge area or the surface of the land, in this case the woodland watersheds of the Pine Barrens. We've had a number of successes, but we have a long way to go. One of the biggest problems that I have run into, of course, is Mr. Ferdinand Geese, who has been a consistent opponent of enlightened legislative measures in this area. Indeed, just 1 week ago, he voted against a bill that he had even introduced, which was a watered-down version of an initiative that Mr. Prospect had placed before the legislature. But that type of deception has not served the public well, but it has caught my attention because Mr. Geese is the legislator who represents where I live, and I feel deeply concerned about the negative votes that he's made. Indeed, we have a Pine Barrens area here in South Setauket that is very important.
That's located, I believe, right off Nisconset Highway, around the Mark Tree Road area?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, that particular patch of Pine Barrens, is there significance to that?
Yes, there is. The area is biologically significant, historically significant, but it is also very significant from a hydrogeological point of view. It's about 1,000 acres in that area, and the Pine Barrens there are a substantial part of the gathering area for the water that enters into the ground by way of precipitation and then flows very slowly through the pore spaces between sand grains toward all six of the major public wells that are in the Port Jefferson Three Village area. Those six public wells then ultimately will be receiving water that is falling on the land this year in the South Setauket Pine Barrens. And so it's our future drinking water supply at its source, and I believe that water must be protected, drinking water must be protected at its source. One of the reasons I'm very discouraged with Mr. Geese is about 2.5 years ago, I went to him and explained very patiently to him what the needs were in order to protect drinking water in our community here. Right in front of the election 2 years ago, he jumped on that bandwagon, sent out press releases about how he was going to save the Pine Barrens, and after the election, took a bill which I wrote for him. I did the work for him. I drafted the bill. I drafted the boundaries of a proposed 400-acre watershed park preserve in South Setauket. Worked very hard on that. I gave it all to him, and he took it to the legislature. But instead of taking it to the park committee, which is the committee that he used to chair, or instead of taking it to another logical committee, which would have been perhaps the finance committee, he took it to the transportation committee.
Transportation, huh?
Which has nothing at all to do with this issue, and needless to say, he knew what the result would be. It was shot down in committee. He then turned around and sort of threw his hands up in the air and said, well, I tried.
Uh-huh.
The bill at that time, under the rules of the legislature, went out for a full vote before the whole legislature, so it was shot down twice.
Now, you weren't able to go to another legislator? You could only go to the one in your area?
That's right. This is an initiative that has to come. There's a general feeling that you must work through the legislator who represents that particular patch of land. And in this instance, the greater Port Jefferson Three Village area is within Mr. Geese's jurisdiction. So the initiative had to come from him, and it has not yet come from him. And I'm very discouraged because he basically lied to me.
Let's go to a call. USB, you're on the air.
Yes. A question for Mr. Engelbright.
Yeah.
I understand what he was saying concerning the Pine Barrens and his concern about the drinking water, but it seems I don't mean to make this sound like a horror story. We've been hearing things about acid rain that due to the chemical atmosphere, so to speak, in New Jersey, it's affecting our drinking water all over that New York State. As a matter of fact, that it's not just on Long Island and affects the Pine Barrens, but goes as far as upstate New York to a point where certain even types of fish have even been killed off as a result of this chemical, this situation that is coming from New Jersey and seems to be a very big problem. I was wondering what Mr. Engelbreit, if he's aware of this problem, first of all, of acid rain, and if he is, what could he, as a member of the Suffolk County Legislature, do to try to prevent this, especially a problem that is not, he's out of New York.
Let me first remind our listeners that you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Steve, you want to address that?
Well, first let me just say that acid rain, while it is a very, very serious problem to the biology of lakes in the Adirondack area, is not a biological problem here on Long Island. First of all, the Pine Barrens is what's been referred to as a leaky ecosystem. It is naturally very acidic. The soils in the Pine Barrens determine not only the rate of infiltration of rain, but also the chemical composition of the water. And indeed, if you look at those portions of the Pine Barrens where the water seeps back to the surface, in some places the pH readings are about 5 or 5.2. So it's quite acidic to begin with. Acid rain does not exceed the natural acidic soil conditions, therefore, of the Pine Barrens area. And those pHs in the 5 to 6 range are not harmful for drinking purposes. They are harmful, however, if you take a look at the biology of a northern Adirondack lake, which has a natural acidity closer to a pH of about 7 or even higher. So the chemistry of the lakes upstate is changing, but acid rain is not changing adversely the natural chemistry of our water bodies within the Long Island Pine Barrens. And so, from a public health perspective, it is not a problem. And from a biological perspective, it is not a serious problem here either. And by the way, most of the contamination is airborne, coming out of the Midwest, out of Ohio and the steelmaking area of Ohio and Pennsylvania, not out of New Jersey.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Engelbreit.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling. Our number is 246-7901. Tell me about the legislature question I have. Do they have say over how much development there is on Suffolk County? If say, somebody came in and wanted to build a shopping center, would they have a say in it?
No. That's a town issue. And indeed, the levels of government are generally pretty well circumscribed with respect to certain powers. Now, the county government does have the county planning department, which does set certain criteria for environmentally sensitive areas, such as the coastal zone. Again, though, what it amounts to is a dialogue between the county planning department and the town planning department. And in the final sense, the towns usually go along with logic that has been laid out at the county level for all of the island. But the decision is at the town level. Indeed, in the same sense, the county health department does have the ability to establish rules and regulations. Article 6 and Article 12 come to mind of the county health code, which set criteria for the number of houses set a threshold within a development. When you, I think it's if you have more than 20 houses, you have to, and if you're within one of the environmentally sensitive zones in the central part of the county, that you have to go to a packaged sewer treatment plant. That does come out of the county, and that does set a certain minimum criteria criterion for development. But it is, again, the towns which usually have the review and approval power for all subdivisions and all housing and all commercial construction as well.
Uh-huh. We'll talk more about this in a moment. Let's go to this call. Hello, USB, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question about sewers and about the record of Mr. Gates versus what needs to be done, particularly with relation to the state university.
Mm-hmm. What's the question?
Well, the question is that Mr. Gates seems to think that the university is the source of the sewer problem in this area.
Well, the source of the sewer problem in this area might have originally been the university, but the present context, the main source of the problem is Mr. Geese. Bear in mind, let's take a look at this from a historical perspective. The man was put into office 6 years ago on the promise that he was going to clean up the sewer problem that we have here. Under Section 201 of the Federal Clean Water Act of 1972, money was provided originally at up to 90% of the total cost of a sewer construction project. Money was provided through Section 201 to local municipalities to clean up their discharge of sewage. Our Section 201 study is now the longest running study in the history of the program. Think about that. It has been delayed from enactment for by Mr. Geese for his own political reasons. He knows that this is the issue that brought him into office, and he feels that he has felt in the past that by keeping the issue alive, that is, by not solving, by not moving expeditiously to solve the problem, he has been able to prolong it. The reality is that the university should have planned better in the beginning for its sewage disposal. In the present context, however, Mr. Geese has not followed through. He has not solved the problem. The Port Jefferson community still has only primary treated sewage being discharged into the harbor 6 years after Mr. Geese came into office. That condition still exists. We are only now beginning to move out of the planning stage and into the design stage. We may still be 2 years from the construction stage for any of the rehabilitation that needs to take place. And indeed, Mr. Geese has delayed so long that federal funding has dropped to 75%, and there's a very good likelihood that the federal match may drop to 55% because of the delays. So it's going to cost money. Let's take a look at another very critical problem here. There are three sewer problems within the 5th Legislative District. One is the sewer district number 10, which is in Strathmore, that discharges to groundwater. The domestic wastes of some 6,000 people are treated in a packaged sewer treatment plant down in the Strathmore area, and that is discharged into the ground as secondary treated sewage. Under rules and regulations that have been implemented in recent years, it is necessary to have tertiary treatment take place before discharging to groundwater, and that means that that plant is no longer in conformance with the law. Mr. Geese, 2 weeks ago, cut the people of Strathmore off very badly, damaged the Strathmore portion of our community. He put through two pieces of enabling legislation in the county legislature. One was to begin finally the design of a sewer treatment plant at Port Jefferson and one at Stony Brook. Regrettably, the plant in Strathmore was not included. And so Mr. Geese has basically left the people in Strathmore with just a promise. The promise is, oh, I'll get the rules changed. I'll get the rule changed that says that you have to upgrade your plant. Now, he has received both verbal and written responses from state government that says, we are not going to change our state law to suit your local political need. They didn't say it in those words, but they said basically that the public health is not going to be compromised for you, Mr. Geese. And so what's happened is that the Strathmore plant is out of conformance, and Mr. Geese has not put in a bill to do anything with the Strathmore plant. He's allowing it to continue to be out of conformance. That's really tragic. The reason it's tragic is because had he put a bill in, federal money at as much as 75% of the total cost would have been available to do something to help that plant come into conformance so that its discharge into the ground was not going to contaminate our drinking water supplies. Instead, Mr. Geese has ignored the issue. He's just basically given a lot of hot air and tried to just forget the issue or sort of paste a Band-Aid over that problem. The reality is that the plant is now about 15 years old and is undergoing so much deterioration that it's going to have to receive a very costly and expensive upgrading anyhow. But that upgrading, just to keep the existing plant working, will not be subject to any sort of matching federal or state funds. In other words, the county is going to have to carry that share, and it will be charged back to the residents in the district. So instead of having a plan in place which would have reduced the people's tax load, he has put in, through his negligence, has allowed a basic situation to evolve in which the people of Strathmore are going to have perhaps a doubling or tripling of their sewer costs, and that's really too bad.
Does that answer your question?
Oh, you mentioned three problems. What are the other two?
Well, there are three plants in this community. Each of the plants is its own problem. Certainly the university sewage should be treated. I do not agree with Mr. Geese. He says that the university sewage should be discharged into the ground. I disagree with that idea. I think that it is much more inappropriate to discharge treated sewage into the ground from which we take our drinking water than it is to discharge highly treated sewage into tidal waters. There's a risk factor involved in either scenario. And one must understand that of the pollution in Port Jefferson Harbor, only 25% of that is due to point source discharge, which is a way of saying only 25% comes out of a pipe. The other 75% of the pollution problem in Port Jefferson Harbor is caused by street runoff, dog wastes, automobile drippings, and so forth that wash into the harbor due to rain. I believe that the harbor should be cleaned up. I believe that it's atrocious that Mr. Geese has let 6 years go by without having upgraded the Port Jefferson plant. But I also believe that the university waste should not be discharged into the source of our drinking water. He ran on the slogan, we don't want your sewage, you keep it. That's a nice slogan, but I'll tell you something. If you pump treated sewage into the ground, it's not going to stay on campus. It's going to move along with the flow of regional groundwater toward local drinking wells. One other thing about sewers I thought I'd mention. Mr. Geese promised to prevent the cost of the Southwest Sewer District from falling on the shoulders of people here in the 5th Legislative District, who, as you know, do not benefit at all from the somewhat dubious benefits of the Southwest Sewer District. In January of this year, however, he voted to obligate the people of this district to pay for the Southwest Sewer District. He placed, by way of his vote, the full faith and credit of Suffolk County behind a $59 million Industrial Development Agency bond to support the Southwest Sewer District in what amounted to a gamble that there would be some sort of special financing arranged. That special financing has not been arranged, and it looks very much as if all of the people of this community, including those who already in Sewer District Number 10 pay rates higher than the Southwest Sewer District residents, all of the people here are going to have to pay because of Mr. Geese's vote for the Southwest Sewer District. It's scandalous, and it's really unfortunate that he hasn't been more square with people.
We have to go to another call.
Thanks
for calling. Our number is 246-7901. My guest is Steve Englebright, candidate for the Suffolk County Legislature, 5th District, opposing Ferdinand Geese. USB, you're on the chatterbox.
Okay, I'd like to find out your gut reaction, Mr. Englebright, concerning the deaths of people who are killed in the prize-fighting ring. I'm thinking, basically, of Ginkgo Behinas, who was killed in the boxing ring just 2 weeks ago. Well, they say that a background can determine a man, and I'd like to find out a little more about you. I guess, how do you feel? What is your gut reaction concerning something like this as a politician?
Well, I think it's heinous to see people battered into a position of brain damage and subsequent death. And I have a lot of problem with that particular aspect of what is called sport. But I would also remind you that that I'm running for the office of the Suffolk County Legislature, which has no input at all into the management of the rules regarding prize fighting.
Uh-huh.
Oh, thanks for that unique question.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye now. There is something that just went into effect today, and that's, of course, the New York State bottle bill. Actually, I guess the word bottle bill is kind of misleading because it's actually a beverage container law that anyone buying cans or bottles or plastic containers of beverages must return them, or should return them anyway, to get their 5-cent deposit back. About 2 years ago, I guess it was, the Suffolk County Legislature voted to have a Suffolk County bottle bill, which never really went into effect because the state one sort of superseded it. How would you have voted?
I would have voted in favor of the bottle bill.
How come?
Well, because I'm very much aware of the very limited amount of space that we have in our landfills, and we really do have to do everything we can to reduce the amount of waste going into our landfills, and make one way to do that is to remove all the bottles that are presently going into the landfills and from that waste stream and recycle them. I'm also very concerned about going to the local shopping center to get some ice cream at night and having to worry about losing one of my tires because of the glass in the parking lot. So there is also a safety problem. I had my foot very badly cut a couple of years ago also while at the beach because of a broken bottle on the beach. And so I'm concerned both from the perspective of the long-range need of protecting the shrinking and very valuable commodity of landfill space, and also in the short term, more personal need of safety to my property and my person.
And you think the bottle bill will really eliminate the litter on the streets? And
yes, I do. There's going to be a time of very difficult adjustment. There are inevitably going to be some problems evolving from the lack of familiarity of in the present context of what is involved with returning beverage containers. But it makes good sense to recycle and to conserve space in our landfills, and it will not in the long run have been regarded as a decision that was anything other than extremely wise.
Mm-hmm. We have time for a few more calls. 246-7901 is our telephone number, area code 516. USB, you're on the air.
Yes, Eric Crowley. This one's for you. Just want to call up. I've listened to you before on USB, and I wish you a lot of luck on your new show, Chatterbox.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Sorry, Steve, that wasn't for you. Well, getting back to the bottle bill anyway, because that's been on my mind recently. It's as you say, it's going to be a period of adjustment. Now, what we have here, we don't have deposit bottles so much that are being refilled as in the old days. It's kind of confusing because the bottles say no refill, deposit 5 cents. They're not refilling them anymore. Do you know why?
I really don't know what the technical reason for that is.
Uh-huh.
I know what the effect is. The effect is that the bottled glass does not end up in the landfill. And my supposition is that it goes back to a manufacturing process where the glass is crushed and then reblown.
Uh-huh. Well, one final thing on this subject. How come it never happened here in Suffolk, even though the legislature approved it? What went wrong?
There were extreme lobbying pressures brought to bear on the Suffolk County Legislature. And with the departure of Patrick Halpin from the county legislature, he's now the Democratic candidate for county executive and is the father of the bottle bill. When he left the county legislature to go to the New York State Assembly, he took with him his great expertise and leadership ability, which he used very wisely and with great success at the state levels. That's probably the main reason why the bill went through at the state level. But without his presence in the county legislature to fight off the lobbyists, things stalled out there.
Uh-huh. Okay, to wrap things up here, first of all, I'd like to ask, well, it may seem kind of a silly question, but can you say anything good about Ferdinand Gies?
Oh, sure. He's a very nice man. He's entertaining and colorful.
Mm-hmm.
It's just regrettable that he's not a very good legislator. But I have no personal animosity toward him.
There's a difference, though, between disagreeing with someone's voting record and saying he's not a very good legislator. What do you have to support that?
I don't think he's a good legislator because he has not been a good steward of the needs of the people. He has not prevented us from having to run the risk of paying for the Southwest Sewer District. He has not solved the problems in this district that revolve around the issue of sewers. He has driven up the cost of county government substantially. He has voted for budgets that have increased our share of the county share of property taxes 57% in just the last 3 years. Not only did he vote for those budgets, but he padded them. That's what I mean when I say that he's not a good legislator. He should be protecting our pocketbook. He should be protecting our cultural interests. He should be protecting our health. And he's not.
Steve, you have 1 minute to sum up why people should vote for you as Suffolk County Legislature on what day is it?
The date of the election is November 8th.
Tuesday, November 8th.
Well, I would ask that people take a look at what my record is. I have been involved in many units of government as an advisor to government. I have built a record of service to the community. I've served as the vice president of the Association for Community University Cooperation. I've been trying to share the resources of the university with the community at large for many years. I've been very active in what I think are some of the most important issues facing Long Island. Indeed, Newsday said that protecting drinking water is the most important issue facing Long Island in the long term. I have been at the forefront of that particular issue, and I bring a special expertise and background to the county that would assist greatly in protecting our drinking water supplies. I would only ask that people take a look at my record of service and give me a chance to serve in an even greater capacity.
My guest for today on Chatterbox has been Steve Englebright, candidate for the Suffolk County Legislature 5th District, opposing the incumbent Ferdinand Geese. And Steve, good luck.
Thank you very much, Eric.
Be sure to tune in next Monday at 2:30 p.m. when we'll once again have a guest up here, and you'll have a chance to air your views over the phone on Chatterbox here on USB.